Hey, Elon.
Hey, Casey.
Welcome back.
Yay!
How is your lockdown life going?
Well, so I am technically still an essential worker, but I am working from home. Because, you know, the health department can't close during a health crisis. So
that would be counterintuitive.
Yep. I am trying to function in my job and also homeschool the kids at the same time, and shit ain't been going great.
Yeah.
I have still a very tenuous grip on my sanity, but it is slowly, like, we're slowly losing a finger every day.
I feel that in my heart of Grinchy hearts. I still live alone with three children. I still don't have a car because my car was totaled.
Oh my god.
And literally just holding on by a thread with that sanity. Like,
hell yeah.
Like Jack Torrance in The Shining. Like,
I feel like we should get hazard pay for having the kids out.
Yeah. Man.
Because, fuck. This has been brutal.
Fuck this plague, man. Just fuck.
Yeah.
Thank God for White Claw and cannabis.
Yes. Yes. And large amounts of Purple Moon wine from Trader Joe's. No sponsorship needed. That shit is just delicious.
You know, I've not tried it ever, but it's on my bucket list for sure.
It is quite tasty and quite cheap.
I need some everything bagel seasoning, so I need to go anyway.
Okay. I found a big ass container of everything bagel seasoning at Walmart.
Yeah.
Like, way bigger than Trader Joe's one. Like, it's like a canister. It's huge. I've been putting that shit on everything.
When I went to Walmart, I did not see any everything bagel seasoning, and I am very disappointed.
I think it might be in the aisle with like ethnic seasonings because it's from a Mexican seasoning brand. So they make it, and they also are the ones that make the oh good lord, it's like a refried bean seasoning and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
but yeah, really, really good. But I did find out on my last Trader Joe's run that they have an everything but the elote seasoning, and I tasted it the other day, and it straight up tastes like Mexican street corn. It is fire.
Oh. Like,
it's got the cheese in it. It's got the chili seasoning. It's got the lime. It is amazing.
Ooh, yum.
So I put that on bagels, and also my little, like, Swedish crisp bread things with the eggs on them.
Yum.
They're delicious. So yeah, I came across that by accident. I was like, I need to buy tons of this and stock up. So that's what I did. I bought like 4 bottles of that.
Nice. I've been obsessed with everything seasoning.
Oh yeah.
For like a minute now.
I put it on our chicken the other night and it works, weirdly enough.
I could see that though, because I mean there's nothing in it. Because you think, like, when you eat Chinese food, they put, like, different seeds and things in sometimes, so.
Exactly.
And there's nothing in there that's that weird. Like, it's onion and some, poppy seeds.
Onion, garlic, dill, like.
Poppy seeds.
A couple things you would season meat with.
Yeah.
So, it was pretty good. I did that with some, like, honey garlic sauce on top. Really good.
Yum.
I dig it. So as we're sharing quarantine recipes.
I dig it. So yeah, guys, we lead these very exciting lives. Just loving everything bagel seasoning and doing.
It's the little things. We're getting drunk and putting everything bagel seasoning on literally everything in the kitchen.
I mean, honestly, guys, ain't no laws when you're drinking claws. Just say it.
Oh my god, I almost spit that out.
So, we're big time, Elon.
Oh, yes.
We are big time. I looked a minute ago and we are almost to 10,500 followers on Facebook. which feels big. And we just launched our t-shirts. You guys can buy shirts. You can buy.
We have merch now, guys. Like real merch.
We have merch. And they're cute. They have kitties.
The t-shirts are adorable.
They have like a Casey kitty, an Elon kitty.
Yes. And even my mom said they were cute. And that is high praise. Because that woman likes nothing.
That's amazing. Shout out to Elon's mom again. She doesn't know it yet, but we're going to be best friends.
Oh, hell yeah. Well, I just got to get you guys together. That's the problem.
It's going to happen one of these days.
Hell yeah. I'm digging the t-shirts. We have been sharing them all over the place. And what has been nice has been the responses from everyone in regards to the t-shirts. I mean, everyone likes them. They are very cute.
Yes, and a little backstory for the people who don't know. The girl who designed them also has a daughter who has trisomy 18, and that's kind of like she has started this little business and is like literally building it up from nothing, and now she's to the point where she can actually manufacture and produce these shirts for us. And
yay!
she like her team did the whole design. Like I showed her kind of what we liked and she ran with it, and it was great. So thanks, Olivia.
It is fantastic. That was a great design, and I know we were both super pleased with it. It turned out beautifully.
It turned out better than what I had imagined.
Right.
You okay?
Sorry, cat doing acrobatics behind me here. I keep getting distracted.
Is it a real cat or a metaphysical cat?
A real cat. My giant orange marmalade cat.
Oh, your BB Hobbs.
Yes, my BB Hobbs.
Love him, I do.
And then I see Fury sticking her feet under the door because she's mad because she's being left out. Let me see if I can let her in. Come on. There you go.
All right. So, do you want to know what was like the coolest thing that's happened to me in a while?
What?
When we got our first tipsy fan mail.
Hell yes. That was the highlight of my entire week last
me
week.
Me too. So we got this cute little email from this girl on Instagram. And I forget what her name was, but she was like super sweet and just very flattering and said nice things about us. So now she is automatically our new best friend.
Hell yeah.
So yeah.
That was, I mean, and I was so pleased. It was just the cutest, like most pure, wholesome message.
Genuine.
Ever.
You know.
I was thrilled.
Me too. Because
I had just come out of like a really long Zoom meeting for work, and I was just like, I hate everything right now.
Oh, I've just been so depressed. Like, I am an introvert, but I also need people sometimes. Like,
yeah.
And I'm wilting. And so to get that, it really boosted my spirits.
Mm-hmm, for sure. So that was nice, getting that sunshine during the day here.
Yeah, the way to Casey and Elon's heart is definitely through flattery, guys.
Oh, hell yeah. Like, hell yeah. Tell us your business.
Write us love letters all the time.
Please. Please and thank you.
Every day. Twice on Sundays.
Twice on Sundays. And I know I've been super appreciative of those of you that have reached, for those of you that have reached out to us. Just to check in and let you know, and just to see how we were doing. And
yeah, that's super sweet.
It really is.
We're hanging in there, guys. Cool. People are great.
It's wonderful, like this weird little community we've built.
I love it so much, though.
Yeah, I've been having a lot of fun.
Me too.
And so, yeah, what was it? Oh, yeah, April Wright. She sent us a message.
Yeah.
Just checking in, seeing how we were doing. And that warmed the cockles of my cold, dark heart.
Me too.
And I appreciate that.
Me too. It made my Grinchy heart grow 3 sizes.
Yes. Also, she's adorable. And those purple braids she had a couple months ago were fantastic.
Yes, actually, her hair.
It's always, like, on point.
Fire.
I don't, I'm like, oh, it makes me kind of, like, regret my dreads just a little.
Oh, you shouldn't, though, because your hair is amazing, too.
Thank you. I always wanted to go purple. I've always wanted to go purple, but my hair is super resistant to color, so that shouldn't happen.
Have you tried that, wax?
Yeah, it gets stuck. I couldn't get it. And, like, it kind of got stuck in my hair, and it took really long to rinse out. It just wasn't great for me.
Bummer.
Yeah, so I'm going to try that temp color that Shantae was talking about.
Oh, yeah.
Which is blonde or blue. I'm going to try that and see what happens. Because at least that I know rinses out.
My fingers are crossed for your hair.
That's the funny thing about this quarantine. Like, it's bringing out some very strange tendencies that I didn't realize I had. There's been a sharp uptick in the amount of porn I watch.
Me too.
Yeah. And I have been wanting to do very weird things with my hair. Like, I've been debating an undercut for, like, 2 weeks now.
I actually, the other day, was like, I kind of want to shave my head.
Yes! Okay, so this is what happened. I was retwisting my hair because I just washed it. And I was like, okay, well, maybe I don't need to look like a Wookiee this week. Okay. So I'm retwisting it, and I got to playing with one of them. I was like, I wonder how long my hair is now if I take it down. So I took one of my dreads down. Girl. There was so much fucking
hair. I don't doubt that.
Because that's the interesting thing. Because, like, shrinkage. So if you're looking at a dreadlock, you've got, say that you take down an inch of hair.
Mm-hmm.
When you take it down, it really is 3 inches of hair.
Yeah.
So with my hair being down to almost my butt since I cut it recently, that's just too much damn hair. And I was like, yeah, no, that's not going to happen. So I took that one down and then rebraided it and just tucked it in the back because I was like, man, fuck it. We'll see. So quarantine has been having some very weird results with me.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Lots of weird porn.
Yes.
And not like normal porn, like,
no,
weird,
like very specific fetish porn. Very specific.
So I ended up recently on overweight Asian men with micro penises.
Oh my god.
And they were like seeing who could ejaculate the fastest.
Amazing.
And it's not like I don't know if this is like how other people are. But I don't always watch porn just to be, like, turned on. Like,
interesting.
A lot of times it's just fascinating.
Yes.
And so, like, I watch the weirdest things.
So, do you remember, like, I think we would have been, let's see, if I was in high school, you would have been, like, college age. So, there used to be a body modification website that was called BME. And they had a pain Olympics. Does that sound familiar to you at all?
It vaguely sounds familiar, yes.
Okay. So there would be different people that posted videos of them, like, putting nails through their balls and, like, doing awful shit to their genitalia. Okay. So I had an inkling. I was like, you know what? I haven't seen any of those in a long time. So then I ended up in the, like, cock and ball torture section.
Oh, yeah.
X-Tube, and I was like, oh, fuck, I forgot about this. So then at that point, I'm just looking at shit because it looks interesting.
Right.
Like, I wasn't even into it for the, like, arousal factor.
Yeah, it's just fascinating. Like, I always just, I'm like, why? Why does that?
Yeah. I'm like, I have this suspicion, and this is me with my fucking sexual psychology bullshit. But I feel like some wires got crossed between pain receptors and genitals at some point in some of these people.
Maybe, yeah.
There was also a study done that was like based on the basically how your brain was laid out and how it was wired. People with foot fetishes, the section of your brain that lights up for sexual stimulation, some of the wires ran over the section that was like your extremities.
Oh.
So those two were connected because of that. They started seeing this in people that have foot fetishes. So that same part of their brain is excited by feet as they would be for their genitals being stimulated.
That is very fascinating.
It was interesting. And I really was like, I want to write a paper about this, but I never was able to. One day I'm going to.
You should, because I would read it.
It was really cool, because there were so many studies and like, and CT scans that I was looking at. I was like, this is incredible. Like, why has no one talked about this before?
Is it raining?
So, that is what we have been doing with our quarantine. Watching weird porn and getting trashed. But we had some difficulties audio-wise that we were trying to sort out. And we're hoping this works.
Yeah, hopefully this isn't too terrible, guys. Just bear with us. Yeah. This isn't forever.
Weird background noise feedback, but hopefully not as bad as last week.
Yeah, hopefully. Ugh.
Yeah.
So do you want to hear some dad jokes?
Of course I do.
So this week, guys, we decided to do an old standby favorite of serial killers. And I chose my beloved Edmund Kemper. And in honor of his sick obsession with his mother, today's dad joke theme is moms. So, Elon, why did the cookie cry?
Why?
Because his mother was a wafer too long.
Oh, hell. Mm. Okay. Oh, that's terrible.
I know. What do you call a small mom?
What?
A minimum.
Oh, fuck. All right.
Why is the computer so smart?
I bet I know this. Okay, what is it?
It listens to its motherboard.
Yep, that was what I thought.
Yeah!
Oh, that's terrible.
I know.
You put a fluffy tail behind you.
That's Atticus.
He's so cute.
Atticus. He escaped today, and then he cried like a banshee.
Oh.
Because, you know, outside is scary.
Outside is scary.
When you're 10 and you've never been out before.
Right. I think the cats are kind of like, Shuri was doing something weird over by the laundry. Hobbs is trying to plot his next aerial attack. So if you guys hear some hissing and biting in the background, that's why.
Don't mind them. They're just assholes.
It's yep, fine. Correct. And they have no home training.
Mine don't either. It's fine.
Right.
It's fine.
So, in our dive into old school serial killers, I at first was looking at doing a segment on Eileen Wuornos, but her whole story, her life was so fucking sad, and I couldn't handle it, so we pivoted, and I chose Clementine Barnabette.
I'm excited for this, because I literally know nothing about her.
Okay. So, like, we've had conversations before about how serial killers tend to overwhelmingly be, like, white males with various complexes, right?
Correct.
And you also know my deep need to find deviation in what we think of as normal.
Correct, yes.
And I did.
Yes.
So this was a story I just learned about recently, and I am straight up fascinated. The brutality of these murders was unprecedented at the time, let alone by a woman.
I am so here for this.
These particular murders were committed by a black woman in the early 1900s living in the South.
Get it, girl?
Right?
Overachieve.
I'm a little proud, but yeah.
Overachieve.
So we're going to get into Clementine Barnabette and her murder cult.
Yes. Also, I love the name Clementine.
Me too. It's one of my favorites.
fun fact, Sean's family used to have a goat named Clementine that used to beat him up.
Okay, one, I like Clementine. Two, I know I say this a lot, but poor Sean.
I know, poor Sean.
All right, so in St. Martinsville, Louisiana, there was a young couple named Raymond Bernabet and Nina Porter. They met and conceived two children. Their oldest was a boy named Zephyrin, and their daughter was Clementine, who was born in 1894. And can we just pause for a minute and just, like, think about these glorious fucking names that these parents gave?
Okay, but Zephyrin is, like...
Zephyrin is an incredible name.
It's, like, a fucking rock star. Like,
yes, I'm going to use that for something. I don't know what. Something.
You need another cat.
No, don't say that too loud. You know Tony will freak out.
Yeah.
I think that I'm going to use that in my next terrible fanfic.
I love it.
So, their father, Raymond, was a small-time criminal and a sharecropper by trade, which was normal for most black families in the South at that point. He also had a penchant for physical abuse and ruled his family with an iron fucking fist. Yeah, he was an asshole.
That was pretty common back then, I feel.
Yeah. So, at his direction, the family pulled up stakes and moved to Lafayette, Louisiana in 1909. Zephyrin and Clementine were teenagers at this point. Clementine was 15, Zephyrin was like 17 or 18. It wasn't super clear what year he was born, so I'm kind of guesstimating based on the report. So, once the family settled in their new home, Raymond became involved with a local cult. The Church of Sacrifice.
Okay.
Right? The name alone should tell you some shit is up, right?
Yeah. Did I tell you about how William was questioning me about sacrifice?
Was this during the Catholicism conversation?
No, actually. Like, he came out of nowhere and was like, Mom, what does sacrifice mean? And so I was thinking, like, in the context of, like, okay, we're in the middle of this pandemic, so we are choosing to give up going and doing certain things for to benefit someone else. We're choosing to do this, even though it doesn't really necessarily benefit us, we're doing it to help somebody else. And he said,
oh, that's a good way to explain that.
And
he
said, okay, but what about the one where you kill someone?
Okay, wait. You know I adore William. He is the little creeper of my heart. But where did he get that?
I have no idea. But I was kind of like equally like impressed and terrified.
Because he used it correctly.
Yes.
Same when they swear. It's like, I'm a little impressed and proud, but also like, whoa, pump your brakes.
Yeah. Yeah. So I had to like, yeah. So then I was like, okay, do you know what God is? And then unfortunately my poor kids, I was not raised religious and I am an agnostic atheist. Like, I don't believe in God, but I'm not saying never. I'm just saying, like, no one has ever proven that to me.
Right. I haven't seen it yet, so.
So, you know, whatever. Right. Maybe, maybe not. But I don't believe in that particular ball of wax. So, I feel bad, though, because William, like, literally, he didn't know what God is. He didn't know, like... And so I was like, okay, I obviously need to step up my game in that department to teach him, but... Yeah, so then we had to kind of explain, like, there were people a long time ago, and some still, but it's rare, who believe that, like, if you were to kill something that was alive and give it as an offering, that, it, you know, blessings would be bestowed and whatever, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it was an interesting conversation for a six-year-old to bring up.
But I always enjoy how you explain these things, and they are going to be the most well-rounded freaking kids, because they're going to know something from every tradition, because you're making it a point to educate them now.
Right.
So they can make their own decisions later.
Yeah.
That's fantastic.
And I mean, I'm not saying like that they have to believe one way or the other. I kind of want them to have like the general knowledge of everything, you know? Like, because like the school that they go to is extremely diverse, especially religion-wise. Like, I know of several families who are Jewish and Muslim, and you know, we've got the traditional Christian-based religions, and I just want them to be able to hang out with everybody.
Right, and like actually have those the understanding and the sensitivity needed to not make their friend feel othered.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
That's fantastic.
We just want to love everybody. All right.
Right, just let's all be friends. Let's everybody be cool.
All right, I'll be done distracting you now.
Okay, so the Church of Sacrifice, their beliefs were rooted in the idea that taking someone else's life would give them immortality.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, as you can expect, following Raymond's lead, the rest of the Barnabettes became involved in the cult as well. Within a couple years, the entire family was fairly highly ranked in the organization, and at only 17, Clementine herself was high priestess.
Nice.
And I feel like, well, damn, get a bitch. But also, no, don't get a bitch.
Yeah.
All right. So, January of 1911, the bodies of a family of three were discovered in their home in West Crowley, Louisiana, near the Texas border. Walter Byers, his wife Sylvania, and their 3-year-old son were murdered in their bed. Walter Byers was described as an industrious and reputable colored man. He worked at a rice mill and didn't really seem to have any enemies. He clearly wasn't well off, like this wasn't a robbery. So when the police arrived, they found the Byers laying together in the master bed with their skulls completely split, like in two.
I'm
The
just
report.
picturing like when you like cut open a pomegranate.
Exactly. That was how I pictured it too. So the report describes their condition as, quote, brained by an axe. The bed was completely soaked with blood, and officers noted some smeared bloody footprints on the floor. The doors were bolted from inside, meaning the culprit had entered the home through a window. Upon investigating, the officers found the murder weapon, a large axe. That axe was in a bucket of bloody and gory water, leaning against the wall in Mr. and Mrs. Byers' bedroom. The police closed the investigation as they could find no motive or really any leads, like there was nothing to go off of. And also, this is early 1900s Louisiana. How detailed are they going to be?
Right. Not exactly
So the
their
first,
wheelhouse.
exactly. Especially because this was a black family, like they're not
Right.
gonna. The murder of the Byers family would be the first of several spanning across southern Louisiana and northern Texas. About a month after the Byers murders, a family of four in Lafayette, Louisiana, was discovered to have been murdered in the same brutal fashion. Alexander Andrus, Minnie Andrus, and their two small children were found dead in their home. The bodies were carefully arranged in the parents' bed once again and presented a gory display to the responding police officers. The whole reason that the police were even tipped off was because the neighbors next door were concerned because they hadn't seen them that day, and they normally see them every day. And they were like, well, something's up because no one's answering the door. Like, can you guys pop over?
Makes sense.
Yep. I'm like, those are good neighbors.
Gotta look out for each other.
Right, just solid wellness check, like, hey, what's going on? Something isn't right. According to the coroner's report, the murder weapon was thought to be a blunt axe. From the article in the Crowley Sentinel, quote, the head of each member of the family was crushed with terrible blows, their brains splattered over the room, and their bodies horribly tortured. At that point, the police began to suspect that the murders were the, quote, work of the same terrible monster. Like, that's literally written into the police report.
Whoa.
I was like, whoa, they are way more, I don't want to say emotional, but like evocative
Yeah,
than our police
less
reports are.
professional seeming.
Yes, they're not as objective.
Yes.
So once they realized that, the more in-depth investigation started taking place. And so as they're doing the digging, the only similarities between the victims was that each family was Black or mixed race. Mostly, I think they were mostly Black, but say one of the parents was white is what they were starting to see, the pattern.
Okay.
And they lived in the same area, but the police couldn't find any other really, like, any real link. So this led to a massive public outcry because there's no rhyme or reason to these murders, and these are families in their direct community that are being murdered brutally, and no one can figure out what the problem is, what the drive behind it is. So in response to the public outcry and the freak out, basically, that was also fueled by the media, because they needed to sell their papers. So they were reporting things very early on that maybe weren't as accurate.
Oh, yeah.
So the police ended up requesting officers from neighboring counties and states to bulk up their patrols just to get more manpower behind it. And then in March of 1911, a month after the Andrews family murders, yet another family was found dead. The Cassaways of San Antonio, Texas, were found in near identical fashion to the previous two murders. Mr. and Mrs. Cassaway and their three children were found in the master bed with the same injuries as the Byers and Andrews's, all of their heads having been split with a blunt axe. Mm. The police officers now they have their ear to the ground. They're like, we need to have something behind this. We need to get a tip from somebody. So it's public knowledge that the Barnabettes are part of a weirdly zealous religion and are aware that the patriarch Raymond has never been a stranger to violence. Like, he has no problems fucking somebody up. The investigators then set their sights on him. They're observing him. They're listening to the rumors. But they were still having trouble finding a connection between Raymond and the victims until a chance conversation between his mistress and one of her friends. See, what had happened, she and Raymond had gotten into a huge fight. And while she was giving her friend all the messy details, she suggested that Mr. Barnabette had a connection to the Andrews murder. The police picked up on this rumor and arrested Raymond on suspicion. Raymond Barnabette was then charged with the murder of the Andrews family, for which there really wasn't much evidence, and his trial in October was fairly short. There was nothing tying him to the scene until his children testified. Clementine took the stand and gave a very detailed statement describing the night her father came home with blood all over his clothes and threatened the rest of the family if they didn't get out of bed to help him dispose of the evidence. Her brother, Zephyrin, gave confirmation and went on to say that Raymond told them that he, quote, killed the whole damn Andrews family, and that they were both terrified and that he would kill them if he was actually released. So as a result, Raymond was convicted and imprisoned. Mm. While Raymond was in prison, another murder took place in Lafayette.
Dun, dun, dun.
Right, imagine that. November 1911, Norbert Randall, his wife Asina, and their four children. Okay, so note about the four children. They might have had three children and then a nephew that was living with them, but yeah, four children in all. They were found in the master bedroom of their very simple, comfortable family cabin. One interesting detail, though, is that Norbert Randall was Minnie Andrews' brother from the previous murder. Yeah. So I was like, okay, what happened there? What was there a beef that no one knew about?
That's a very, very strange coincidence.
Mind you, I found that after digging through, like, I want to say, like, 15 or 20 news articles. So, yeah. The scene was almost identical to the previous murders, except this time, the father was shot in the head and the children were dismembered.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, these are babies. Like, they're small children, like under the age of four. So this level of escalation had not been seen in any of the previous murders. The police still believed that Raymond killed the Andrews's, but the occurrence of another murder led them to believe he did not act alone. The lens of suspicion is now firmly focused on the Barnabet children. Both Clementine and Zephyrin were arrested by order of Sheriff Louis Lacoste. He stated that his suspicions arose due to the family's reputation around town. Their neighbors had been heard to say the Barnabets were shifty, filthy degenerates. And I was kind of like, well, damn.
Harsh.
Yeah, that was kind of harsh, given this was early 1900s. Like, that's a serious accusation. So, and also, there was the minute detail that when the police came to arrest Raymond for the Andrus murder, there was blood on Clementine's clothing.
Hmm.
She tried to say that her father wiped the blood on her, but, like, come on.
Okay.
What sense does that make?
None.
And, right, doesn't make much. The sheriff also mentioned that due to the amount of blood on her clothing, he found that suspicious. So, after Clementine and Zephyrin were brought in and they were being questioned, the police found even more evidence. The Daily Picayune reported the discovery of, quote, a complete suit of clothes in Clementine's room, saturated with blood and covered with human brains.
Explain that away.
Right. And on top of that, the door and the door latch were covered in blood.
Huh. Weird.
So my thought on this was the neighbors weren't wrong, because the investigation and them actually being arrested happened like a month and a half after the murder actually occurred. So that means no one wiped off that doorknob. Nobody cleaned shit in that house.
Gross.
Right? That's disgusting. So I don't think the neighbors were wrong. They were filthy degenerates.
Probably, yeah.
Right. So Zephyrin had an alibi for the nights of the murders. Clementine did not. So she was booked into jail. With both Clementine and Raymond in prison, the public kind of breathed a brief sigh of relief. Like, oh my God, they got him. We're good. Unfortunately, the murders continued. In January of 1912, three more families were killed. The most jarring of these was the Broussard family murder. This one was the most ritualistic and sacrificial feeling of the axe murders. Felix Broussard, sorry, the cat just knocked over a box. Felix Broussard, his wife, and their three small children were killed in their Lake Charles, Louisiana home. There were many details found at the scene, the biggest of which were the fact that the Broussard's hands had been splayed apart with pieces of wood, with the infant's fingers being splayed apart in a kind of like five gesture.
Ooh.
Yeah. The children's blood was also drained and left in buckets at the sides of the beds.
Ooh.
And on the wall was this terrifyingly cryptic Bible verse. When he maketh the inquisition for blood, he forgetteth not the cry of the humble, which is Psalms 9:12. And I was like, I'm familiar with that, and also, what the fuck? Okay. Under that scary ass quote, it was signed The Human Five. So of course the press finds out about this and fucking runs with it. They go nuts. This is this big ass ritualistic. This is a cult. This is voodoo. This is huge. So given the fact that this is Southern Louisiana, deep Southern Louisiana at that, the press played up that ritualistic nature of the murders and began calling them the voodoo murders.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, which was shitty. And I was in my feelings about that briefly, but I let it go. So at that point, the police amped up their interrogation of Clementine and Raymond because shit is getting real. But them questioning Clementine led to a confession. We finally got something. Clementine confessed to committing 17 of the murders and stated that she directed or participated in the others, which was a total of 35 fucking murders.
Wow.
Yeah, she was kind of prolific. I'm not even gonna lie. Clementine then revealed the nature of the Church of Sacrifice, of which she was high priestess, like I said before. She stated that she wore an amulet, which protected her during the murders, and that one of the other priestesses in the cult gave Clementine and her friends conjure bags. So conjure bags are more commonly known as Grigri or mojo bags, and they can be imbued with different properties. So, like, you can have a luck mojo bag, you can have a protection mojo bag, like, they all have different purposes. And this particular mojo bag was to keep her hidden from authorities and to keep her from being caught. So with that, once the woman gave her that, she decided to commit her first murder to, I guess, test the theory. And apparently it paid off because she did not get caught with the first one. Clementine also mentioned that she disguised herself in men's clothing during her crimes, usually those belonging to her father. Huh. I was like, huh. So Raymond may not have done any of this shit, but all right.
Man.
That's rough.
This is why parents think they need to beat their kids.
Right. So we're going back to the Daily Picayune now. They reported that, quote, she did not wish them left orphans in the world, which I don't know, was kind of decent. I don't know. But her actual motives for the murders were never actually clarified. Like, no one knows why she did this shit besides her being part of the cult.
I mean, obviously she was bored.
And also immortality.
I mean, but how many? I mean, I feel like if you sacrifice one and you get mortality, why you keep going? Or do you have to? Or is
that it too? Like, how many people do you have to kill to reach immortality?
Yeah.
What's the number?
Or was she just like secretly trying to make Horcruxes and like failed? I don't know.
Boom! There it is. I like that theory. That's my favorite.
There you go.
So, the problem with Clementine's confession was that it was never the same. They questioned her over and over for about 2 months, but every time she had different details, and they never quite made sense or fit together.
Yeah, but that could be, like, if she's just batshit crazy, like...
Exactly. That was my thought, too. So, her versions of the story vacillated between her father being the murderer, despite his imprisonment, to her orchestrating the murders from the jail. And then she mentioned having two other accomplices, where it was like, where the fuck did these dudes come from? Because you never mentioned these before. What the fuck?
They were the voices in her head.
Yep, that was my thought too. So the sheriff is still investigating this, and he hops on this idea that there's accomplices. He looks into them by name, goes to where she says they live, got nowhere. There was nothing. Every single lead was a dead end.
Of course.
Right. And I was like, oh, okay, we're talking criminal justice blue balls. Great. So at that point, Clementine's attorneys attempted to plead insanity, which makes sense because the bitch is crazy, right? But to no avail. Court medical evaluations concluded with a diagnosis of, quote, moral perversion, which seems vague, and I feel like we would probably be guilty of that somehow.
Yeah.
Because all the fun shit is morally perverse.
What is that shirt that the Chive was selling? Morally flexible is what I prefer to call it.
I like that. We're totally using that somewhere.
Hell yeah.
But yeah, so she was deemed sane and stood trial. So, October of 1912, Clementine was found guilty, and the now 18-year-old was sentenced to life at the brutal prison farm, Angola State Penitentiary. Now, this is at the Angola State Penitentiary still exists. It is just now called the Louisiana State Penitentiary, and is commonly referred to as the Alcatraz of the South, if that is any indication of how brutal this fucking place is.
Yikes.
Right. So, by all accounts, though, she was a fucking model prisoner, didn't cause any trouble, she kept to herself, but she did attempt to escape in July of 1913 and failed.
This bitch has some cojones.
Yeah, because I looked at a map of this place, and it's just wide fucking spread land. Like, there's nowhere to hide, there's nowhere to obscure yourself so no one can catch you. Like, where the fuck did you think you were gonna go?
That was probably, like, her trying to kill herself with assistance from the authorities, like...
Right. And also because it was the beginning of her sentence. Like, she had been in there for less than 6 months at that point.
Yeah, she probably was just like, eh, fuck it. I don't have anything to lose.
Yeah. So they brought her back in, and she was pretty quiet, was pretty chill. August of 1923... Clementine Bernadette walked out of the prison free as a fucking bird. According to her prison file, Clementine underwent a, quote, procedure that restored her natural condition and allowed her to be released on good behavior after only serving 10 years of
lobotomy.
That was my thought, too. I assumed, because, you know...
That's the era.
1920s, I mean, that yeah. tends to be the solution for everything. Get a yep. bitch a lobotomy.
Yep.
So,
if it's good enough for the Kennedys, it's good enough for everyone.
Exactly. If a Kennedy can get a lobotomy, it'd be fine. It's good for everybody. So, no one really knows exactly what happened to her after that, and no records exist of her later life. It's commonly thought that she's changed her name to, like, move it away or whatever. But... according to one tale I found, in 1985, a young woman went down to visit her 103-year-old great-grandmother in Louisiana, who told her with great detail about Clementine Bernadette's crimes. That year, the great-grandmother died. So when the entire family came down to clean out the house and get it ready, that young woman came across photos of her great-grandmother in her youth, and she was a dead ringer for Clementine when they compared the two.
Ooh.
Right. So, I was kind of taken aback by that. I can totally see that happening. That makes sense to me. But I also found out some awful shit about that penitentiary she's in. Because me being me, I did some additional
digging. Yeah.
So, Angola State Penitentiary was originally a plantation. It was called Angola Plantation. So this gives it another level of fucked up, because you enslave Africans and then have the nerve to name it after an African country is next level balls. Like, that was infuriating in and of itself.
Understandably.
Okay. It still looks like a fucking plantation. It is still operated like a plantation. It's largely agricultural. They have like 2,000 head of livestock at a time, and the prisoners are forced to work the land. They don't have a fucking choice. That's just what they do. It's a fucking prison camp.
That's so fucked up. And,
which it's so fucked up, like super upset. And in fact, there were so many murders and like mysterious deaths that the inmates they were originally being buried in cardboard boxes, like just in the ground, not even 6 feet down. They were just putting them in cardboard boxes, like fuck it, like they're throwing people in refrigerator boxes. Until at one point one of the inmates' bodies fell out of the cardboard box because he was too sturdy for the box to support. At that point, they decided to make the inmates build their own fucking caskets.
That is... wow.
I didn't have words for that.
Yeah, like, what do you say to that? That's like psychological torture.
Mm-hmm. It is. And the fact that they have... Right. So this particular penitentiary has the largest amount of life sentence prisoners in the entire country. Something like 85 to 90% of their inmates are there for a life sentence. It's like 3,700 and something people.
Wow.
So they know they're going to die there. And the fact that they have to build their own coffins and shit is awful.
I mean, I'd try to escape and get shot too.
Exactly. So as I continue looking into this, there were memoirs written by prisoners. One of them in particular was written by Wilbert Rideau, who was an inmate from 1961 through 2000. But I believe he died there. Nope, he's still alive. Okay. Well, he must have been released. Okay. So he wrote this memoir into great detail about his years there. And he said that slavery was commonplace in Angola, with perhaps a quarter of the population in bondage throughout the 1960s and 70s. Like, it sounds to me that it was the inmates enslaving each other, but it was facilitated by the warden, by the officers. Like, this was commonplace. And then he was interviewed in an article by the New York Times, where he stated that weak inmates served as sex slaves who were raped, gang raped, and traded and sold like fucking cattle. Like, they were auctioned off and shit. And Rideau said the slave's only way out was to commit suicide, escape, or kill his master. So,
wow.
And this is pretty, with the sanction, like, it was sanctioned by and facilitated by the officers there. Like, this blew my fucking mind.
Wow.
And so we have all that. And then we have the Angola Prison Rodeo. One in April and every Sunday in October, the prison holds a rodeo. Thousands of visitors enter the prison complex. Like, this is all fun. Like, it's like family fun and shit. And this started in 1964. It was planned in 1964, and the first rodeo was held in 1965. Initially, it was held for prisoner recreation, but then started attracting crowds, so they decided to capitalize on it. Now the prison charges admission. Right. They're going to try to make money off of it, literally anything.
I mean,
now the prison charges it, and then due to the rodeo's popularity, they also built a 10,000 person stadium to support the visitors and opened in 2000.
Damn.
So who do you think built that fucking stadium?
Those poor prisoners.
Brutal. Right. So, and also as part of the prison rodeo, they hold like an arts and crafts festival. So they sell the inmates paintings and like any of their art and crafts that they've actually made, which is, I don't know, it makes me feel very uncomfortable.
Yeah, that, it doesn't seem right. I feel like that's exploitation.
Right. And it's so bad. I mean, like, this penitentiary is super well known. Like, it's been mentioned in music. Some of the inmates are famous, like C-Murder, Lil Boosie. Like, there are tons. Clifford Etienne. Like, there are tons of musicians and people that we know that were imprisoned here. And it's been talked about in tons of blues songs. Like, they treat Louisiana State Penitentiary as, like, you know, a circle of hell, basically. Like, you do not want to go there. And it just blows my mind that this place is still operating.
That's crazy.
It is. So leave it to me to keep digging and come across fucking institutional slavery, because why not? But that was Clementine Barnabet and her ritualistic cult murder.
Wow. That was a whole lot to unpack. Like, she could have her own, like, series, I bet.
Yes, I need someone to do this story because she's not even in Murderpedia. Like, there's no mention of her.
Yeah.
Like, I had to dig deep to get this information.
I want to know more about like what happened after she got released, like.
Me too. And no one's been able to find anything about her. Like, it's kind of the same thing as with our necrophiliac episode, where like they change her
Yeah.
name and fell off the face of the earth.
Yeah.
And that is for. Oh, also, side note, Billy Graham, that like crazy offensive televangelist that said that AIDS was God's punishment for homosexuality and shit.
Yeah.
His casket that he was buried in was made by a Louisiana State Penitentiary inmate.
Of course it was.
A senior carpenter named Richard, who also went by the Grasshopper. He had been there for 35 fucking years.
Man.
It's so icky, all of this. It's just, oh, it feels very bad. It
It's
feels
icky.
very,
It's
very bad.
gross, for real. I hate it. It's
It's
gross.
just it's legally sanctioned slavery. That shit didn't go anywhere.
No, it didn't. It just got a new name. So, you know that I have a thing for tall dudes with facial hair.
Hell yeah.
And
Sis, you got a type.
I do. And until recently, I didn't realize it, but apparently Ed Kemper is my type.
Yeah, he kind of is.
When he was like 25, man, if he didn't like to like rape corpses, he'd have been all right.
Okay, so quarantine kind of has our standards in the Mariana Trench.
Okay, it has been.
You know, if
Listen.
not for the fact that he rapes corpses, he's kind of hot. Like,
Okay, but it's been a while, Elon. I live alone.
I'm sorry.
Okay, there's only so much that you can masturbate. Like,
True.
it only goes
Very
so
true.
far. So, obviously, I'm at the point in my quarantine where Ed Kemper looks fucking sexy.
Correct.
And
If
I'm.
Kimber looks fuckable, we've hit peak quarantine.
So, and I don't even feel bad about it. I said what I said.
Yeah. You know I'm
So,
not gonna judge you.
before.
Because I find Ramirez pretty, so
Yeah, and that, ooh. I mean,
I
listen.
know.
Listen. Ramirez? Kemper.
I'll give you that. You
And
know I
let's
like
just think about this
interesting
too.
types.
Kemper was 6'9" and like 300 pounds. He was packing.
Him beefy. Good and sturdy. You like that? It's like eggplant emoji, eggplant emoji.
Is probably like a toddler gripping an apple.
That's my favorite dick comparison. It really is. I'm not even gonna lie. That's my favorite.
Mine too, for real.
The baby thought I'm holding an apple.
My cat is judging me so hard right now.
Oh, I know. I'm being side-eyed by a small orange, a small black one right now, and the orange one is biting my toes. So, yep.
So, funny story, I was waiting for you to get on with your segment, but you already did your segment and it's my turn, so I'm gonna get on with it now. So, we're gonna talk about Ed Kemper. I really just, the more I read about him, the more I could read about him. Like, I got lost in transcripts of his parole hearings. And just, he is a fascinating specimen. So, Edmund Emil Kemper III was born in Burbank, California on December 18th, 1948, to Clarnell Stage Kemper, and Edmund Emile Kemper II. So, Big Ed here was born larger than charge. He weighed in at an ungodly 12 pounds.
Damn, that's a big-ass baby!
I know. He was called Guy by friends and family. And when he was born, he joined his older sister, Susan, who was 6 years older than him. And then 3 years later was followed by his sister, Alan Lee.
Okay.
So I'm not going to talk much about his dad, because his dad was just the typical, like, drop them and run kind of dad, you know? So, but Clarnell was a fucking piece of work. So, Clarnell Elizabeth Stage was born on March 17th, 1921 in Montana. Her parents were Clarence and Nellie Stage, and it actually just occurred to me that these people may have been evil, because they literally just mashed their names together to create the name Clarnell.
Ugh, that is an awful fucking name.
Like Bennifer, but
ugh.
Ew.
It gives me heartburn.
Okay, so no wonder she grew up and raised a serial killer. Ew.
Right. Because I would have snapped.
So, Clarnell was one of three children, and she graduated from Great Falls High School in 1938. And in the senior yearbook, she stated that she wanted to become a secretary and that her favorite subject was typing. She was also very, very active in student clubs and committees. She participated in symphony orchestra, sculptors club, young authors club, the prom committee, and like 100 more. And also, she was 6 feet tall, gorgeous with dark hair, and in every picture that you can find of her, she's like impeccably dressed with like the most up-to-date fashion of the times. Like,
that's my favorite.
Like, she's very much like that Keeping Up with the Joneses type of person.
Mm-hmm.
So she ended up marrying Edmund Emile Kemper II on November 26, 1942 in Great Falls, Montana. It turns out, though, that Clarnell was a very violent alcoholic, and there was a lot of speculation that she also struggled with borderline personality disorder. It's extremely well documented that she constantly abused and humiliated Ed, and she would basically just mock him and ridicule him because of his size, and she would always talk about how he had a weirdo personality, and aww, just constantly just belittle him and be like, no woman will ever love you, you're a goon, whatever. Fun fact, Ed's dad once said that he would rather be on a suicide mission in the war than to stay married to Clarnell.
Damn.
Yeah, if that gives you kind of any idea. So, by age 4, Ed was already over a head taller than all of his peers, and he really struggled to fit in from an early age. He was just kind of this big oaf of a kid. When he was 8 years old, his dad had kind of had enough and peaced the fuck out. He moved to California and never looked back. Ed took this pretty hard because he was pretty close to his dad, and his dad tried to protect him from Clarnell's wrath. And around this time, in one of the interviews that I watched of his, he talks about how he had developed a crush on his second grade teacher, and like his sister teased him pretty heavily about it and made a reference to Ed wanting to kiss her. And he talks about remembering looking at her dead faced and saying that if I kiss her, I'd have to kill her first. Like, at age 8.
Wow.
So, no thanks. He even had stolen his dad's musket and went to her house and was, like, prowling outside of her house with it. Also of note, in one of the interviews that I listened to, his favorite games to play at this age were electric chair and gas chamber.
Oh, okay, that's totally normal.
So in the electric chair, Ed would sit in the chair and his sister would pretend to throw the switch, and he would wear a blindfold and writhe around in the chair and on the floor and pretend to die.
What the
And, gas chamber was reenacting a gas chamber.
Holy shit.
So by the time Ed was 10, his mom had started forcing him to live in the basement, like in the evenings and overnight, because she was pretty convinced that he was going to harm his sisters in some way. So every night they would literally like scoot the dining room table out of the way, lift the trap door that was in the floor, and poor Ed would be like banished down the stairs. And this poor guy was terrified of the dark, so he would like turn on the light at the top of the stairs, quick run through the darkness to his room, turn that light on, and then run back to turn the other light off, and then come back to his room as quick as he could.
Wow.
I know, just imagine like that's your life, you live like
It's
that.
regular.
So, he was, and then he would just be stuck down there until breakfast time every morning when they would just move the table back out of the way and let him reemerge. It was around this time that he talks about, he kind of began fantasizing about like doing violent things to his mother. Pretty quickly his fantasies became too big to contain and he started acting them out on like animals, and he buried the family cat alive. And then nothing major happened until he was 13 when he violently killed another cat and then ended up dismembering it and keeping pieces of it in his closet until his mom found the bits and made him get rid of them.
Okay, so that serial killer boxes 5 and 6 checked, right?
Like most all of the boxes, really.
Jesus Christ.
So he, I feel like this is a mixed opportunity for Clarnell here. Like she really could have gotten him some help at
Oh,
this
for
point
sure.
and maybe avoided all of this, but missed opportunities. So fast forward to when Ed was 15, he had enough of his mom's shit and ran away to live with his dad. And he had kind of built up his dad in his head, like dad was the greatest person ever, and they were super close, and dad's gonna o welcome him with open arms, and they're just gonna be best friends till the end of time, right?
Right.
So he gets there and he is super shocked to discover that his dad now has a wife and son. So
Oh,
things,
dear God.
yeah, things go okay at first by most accounts, but as you can kind of gather from the story so far, Ed's sort of a pain in the ass, and his stepmom got over it pretty quickly, and she basically ended up telling Ed's dad that like I'm done dealing with Ed and the migraines that he gives me every day, so it's him or me. Like,
Damn.
and so dad was like, yeah, he can't stay here. Like, this is some bomb pussy. You're
That's what they say. I'm like you. So you, we just trained our kids, man, for
And
coochie.
I don't want you
All
to
right.
take half of my 401k. So, so they decide, Ed can't stay here. And his mom's like, fuck you. He is not coming back here. So
Right.
his dad basically is like, okay, I'm just gonna pawn him off on my parents. So the whole family takes a trip to the Kemper grandparents' house for Christmas, and then everyone leaves except for Ed. They didn't tell him. They just like left him there. They just left him. And
I'm
so
picturing him like looking at the window, like, what the fuck?
yeah. So he's there and he's still just kind of an emo shit. He hates his life. He hates living with his grandparents. His favorite pastime was like sulking around, killing birds on small game. And it happened so much that his grandparents took away his gun for a while because they're like, you can't just kill things, guy. That's not normal.
That's not okay.
So then on one bright August day, Ed was fighting with his grandma, and he kind of always had a chip on his shoulder with her. She was an assertive woman who could be kind of domineering, and he, Ed, perceived that she was constantly emasculating him and his grandfather. And he, in a lot of interviews, he talks a lot about how he basically transferred all of his anger and hatred for his mom onto his grandmother because she was the one that was there.
Oh, yeah.
So he's on this particular day, he's in the kitchen, he's getting a drink of water, he has the gun tucked under his arm, and he's just looking at the back of grandma's head, thinking, I wonder what it would feel like to kill her. And he's like, what the hell? Why not? And so he shoots her, and then I read a couple of different accounts. One account said he just shot her, and then another account says that he stabbed her as well. So I'm not sure which is the way to believe there, but either way, he was bored and decided. So then he's like, oh shit, my grandpa's gonna be pissed. I can't let my grandpa see his wife dead like this. So he goes outside and he shoots his grandpa and kills him.
As you do.
And then he's like, okay, what to do? What to do? Oh, I'll call my mom. So he calls his mom and he's like, yo, mom, I just killed grandma and grandpa. And she's like, God damn it, you motherfucker, call the police. So he calls the police. He is quickly apprehended, taken into custody, and he became kind of a ward of the state and was given to the control of the California Youth Authority. And so while he was there, he went like a complete psychological evaluation, and it was determined that he is like insanely smart, like his IQ is very high. And he also, they said he was schizophrenic. But later in life, he was evaluated again, and it was said that he's completely mentally normal. So take for that what you will, but so he ends up getting transferred eventually to Atascadero State Hospital, which is like a super famous maximum security prison that houses specifically mentally ill criminals. And so he hung out there for 5 years. And while he was there, these psychiatrists and psychologists that were treating him kind of took him under their wing. And he worked with them as like an assistant and would sit in when they were doing all of these like interviews with these hardened criminals. And he actually talks about later, like how he learned to manipulate and like tell the doctors the things they wanted to hear so they would let him out.
Dang.
Yeah, like he is terrifying. Like when you like really get into it and learn about him, he is scary as shit. So anyway, he's there for 5 years, and it comes up for parole on his 21st birthday, and he is released. Now, when he was released, all of the doctors were in agreement that Ed's mom is psycho and he should probably not be around her because she is a huge trigger for his rage, and obviously the rage is explosive and it's led to murder before, so like, why go down that road again, kind of thing? Like,
Right.
you know? So, of course, he doesn't have anywhere else to go, so he's released into his mom's custody. So mom being the like, I have to be perfect for everyone type of person that she is, like wanting to keep up appearances, really pushed and kind of forced to get Ed's criminal record expunged, like sealed. So it ends up that he ended up like basically walking away scot-free from these murders. Like he served 5 years at a Tuscadero and he walks out with no criminal record, like at all. So,
Wow.
and he's living with his mom. She had actually moved to California while he was in a Tuscadero,
Right.
after she had kind of went through her third divorce. So,
Jeez.
yeah. So Ed gets out, he enrolled in community college and started working for the Department of Transportation. And he originally wanted to be a police officer, but he was rejected because of his gigantic size.
Wait, wouldn't that be a benefit?
Not necessarily.
Or
I
would
mean,
not be?
'cause you have to be able to physically like run and
Oh, okay, yeah, you're
you
right.
know,
So,
so I
like,
don't
his clothes allow him to be as nimble as an officer would need to be.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
So he got rejected, but he ended up, like, making friends with a lot of these police officers, and mm-hmm. he would hang out at a popular bar that the police like to frequent to, like, socialize. Mm-hmm. And he kind of used that to his advantage. Like,
oh boy.
The same year that he got out, he ended up getting hit by a car when he was on his motorcycle, and he won a pretty big cash settlement. It was about $15,000, which was a lot of money back then. So he buys a new car with this windfall that he gets, and he is driving around, and he notices that there are these young ladies who are hitchhiking all over the place because it's the early 70s, and that's what they did.
Oh my God. Right?
So he thinks, like, well, maybe this is a good opportunity for me to, like, practice my social skills. So he would, like, give these young ladies rides and stuff, and it was fine for a long time, but then that voice inside his head that was like, just kill people, started getting louder and louder and louder and louder.
Oh wow.
And so he started acquiring the tools that he felt like he would need to assemble, like, his kill kit on wheels. So he got a gun and a knife and some handcuffs, and, you know, he got into a fight with his mom this one night, and he goes out to drive around because that's, like, how he would kind of cool down. And he sees these two girls hitchhiking. So he pulls over, he picks them up, and it's Marianne Pesci and Anita Lucchesa. It turns out that he would end up strangling and stabbing Pesci while Lucchesa was trapped in the trunk, and then he would let Lucchesa out and be like, hey, guess what, your friend got mouthy, and so I popped her one, and she's got a broken nose now, she needs your help. So the girl's like, oh God, not knowing her friend's dead, rushes over to help, and he kills her when she's not looking, basically.
Jesus.
He stabs her to death from behind. Then he decides to take the corpses back to his house. He chopped off their hands and heads because he had learned in prison that that would make them less identifiable. And then he fucked their skulls.
Huh.
Yeah.
Yep.
So, as one does, you know, that's just when I fight with my mom, that's how I handle it. So, a few months go by, and it's now September of 71. Ed picks up 15-year-old Ido Ku, who had missed her bus on her way to dance class. And instead of waiting for the next bus and being super late, she's like, I'm just going to hitchhike. And she also gets murdered in a very similar way, dismembered and disposed of. In January of 1973, Ed would pick up Cindy Shaw and shoot and kill her. He then would wait until his mom would leave her house to run errands, and he hid the body in his room at his mom's house. He dismembered her there and then threw most of her parts into the ocean, but her head, he actually fucked it and then buried it in his mom's backyard face up because he knew that his mom always wanted people to look up to her.
Jesus Christ!
Yeah.
Oh, no!
Yeah.
That's very specific.
Yeah. So then on February 5th, 1973, he picks up Rosalind Thorpe and Alice Liu. They had been lulled into a false sense of security because he had a parking sticker from their university on his window. And his mom had actually given it to him because she worked there, and with the parking sticker, he would have an easier time being her chauffeur. So they saw that sticker and thought, oh, this is a safe person. They climb in his car, and he almost immediately shoots them and then drives out of the parking lot past security with them bleeding to death in the back of the car.
Oh my God. God.
Right. So once again, he decapitates them and dismembers their bodies and disposes of all the bits, but kept their heads to pleasure himself with.
Oh my God, dude.
I know, he's gross. So this brings us to April of 1973. It is Good Friday, and Ed and his mom got into a huge fight. So this time, instead of going out to prowl, he sits in his mom's kitchen and he starts thinking about how he's been killing these people. It's showing up on the news. He feels like they're closing in on him. His mom is going to find out eventually how terrible he is. And that's going to be a pretty shitty thing for her to live with, right? You know, she likes to keep up appearances, and to have like a serial killing son like that, you know, that's hard to live with. So he probably should just kill her too.
Right.
So he grabs a knife and a hammer and he walks into her room after she's asleep and whacks her real good on the head with the hammer a few times, and then slits her throat. And then after she's dead, he decapitates her and cuts off her hands. He then rips out her larynx because he keeps hearing her voice in his head, like belittling him still. And he's just like, shut the fuck up, mom. And he tries to put the larynx down the garbage disposal, but it's too grisly and it won't run. So then he fucks her head.
Nope.
And then he calls her best friend. And the best friend comes over and he strangles her and hides her in a closet and takes off to Colorado.
Oh my God.
So, a few days go by and he's just like all amped up and he calls the Santa Cruz police to confess. At first they did not believe him because remember he was friends with them. So
right.
Eventually he convinces them, and I'm kind of fuzzy on the details there, but he convinces them and somehow the bodies are discovered. Like they go over just to placate him and they're like, oh fuck, there really are dead bodies here. And so they end up like arresting him. And he, obviously, I mean, they arrest him because, you know, he fucking killed his mom and fucked her skull.
But,
he confessed immediately to them and said, hey, I killed these six students. I killed my mom. I killed her friend. And so he ends up getting indicted on 8 counts of first degree murder. After a psychiatric evaluation, he was declared sane by the jury that kind of reviewed everything, and then he ultimately was found guilty on all of the counts. Uh-huh. He had requested the death penalty, death by torture, but that was denied. And instead, he was sentenced to 7 years to life for each count of murder. And those terms are to be served concurrently. He is currently serving out his term at the California Medical Facility.
So, I don't think I knew about him fucking his mom's skull.
Yep.
And or maybe like my brain blocked that out.
Yeah, he did. I think the only one that he didn't fuck the skull was the friend.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is next level. Not gonna lie.
Yeah, he's gross. He's super fucking gross. And now he reads, he actually narrates books for the blind. He's recorded something like 500 titles. He's a model prisoner. And he actually is a very talented artist. And you should Google Ed Kemper ceramic mugs, because he is very talented.
Well, now I have to do that right now.
Yeah, they're like these awesome mosaic things, and it's really cool. And he has stated multiple times in the past that he doesn't really want to get released from prison because he feels like... Isn't it awesome?
What is... I never promised you a rose garden. Oh my God, I love this.
Yeah. He's super talented.
Super pretty. Oh, boy. I'm going to end up buying a serial killer mug, aren't I?
If I could find one for sale, I would buy it.
Right.
For real.
God, that's pretty.
If anybody wants to send me a serial killer mug, I'm into that.
Can we make requests? Fan art and serial killer memorabilia.
I would like to get a serial killer fan of the show.
Oh my god, no. No, thank you.
Listening in prison. Reach out, drop us a line.
Kids. Hell no.
What?
Girl, we got kids. Hell no.
It's fine. They're in prison. It's fine.
So they know their life. They know what they signed up for. Oh god. I did find a really cool Kemper shot glass that I think I might get you for Christmas.
Oh, fun. Oh my gosh.
It's pretty good. I like this one.
So yeah, that's like, I could seriously do, like, a 6-part series on him, I swear. He's so fascinating.
Oh, easily.
But I won't.
There's so much information.
Yeah, so this is, like, the so abbreviated version, but, I mean, it gives you a good idea of how he's fucking crazy.
And skulls.
So, yeah.
Oh, that was good. He's one that I've been familiar with, but his story bothered me so much that I just didn't want to dig into it that much.
It bothers me, but at the same time, it's like the whole train wreck phenomena. Like,
right. Like, I can't look away.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I get it. I totally get it.
Yeah. So, yeah, go buy our shirts, guys. So that we can start bringing you more quality content more regularly.
Yeah.
And we can buy our super sweet custom El Camino and travel around the world and see you guys in it.
Yes, because we need a Sinister, Strange, and Suspicious El Camino that is neon green and purple with skulls and kitties on it.
Yes. And we need an SSS tour of the U.S. and wherever else wants us.
Yes, please. And also, I would be just totally okay with a bar crawl. Like, let's hang out. You guys come drink with us.
When this plague is done, when we
yes,
can...
Once we're done
flatten with the plague, curve.
Social distancing, and this, I don't know, there was the discussion of it ending up being a seasonal illness,
yeah.
Like the flu.
Yeah.
I don't know if that's the case anymore. But, yeah, once it's safe to go outside and be around other humans, I'm totally into it. Let's do a bar crawl. You guys come hang out with us and get trash.
Hell yeah. SSS bar crawl.
I'm into it. And I'm sure Louise would be happy to help us out.
Shot skis. Shot skis. Woo! Shot skis.
And also nachos, because they've got fire nachos and pizza.
Their pizza is the fucking best.
Yeah, I would say, like...
Louis' pizza is the tits.
Louis and Shakespeare, like Shakespeare nachos and the pizza from...
Shakespeare's chicken tenders are where it's at.
Oh my god, yes!
Man, now you got the fat kid talking about the food. Way to go, Aylon.
I'm not ordering out right now, like, damn.
I know.
Like, really want some nachos from Shakespeare's right now.
Oh my god.
That's the best drunk food, and I am, we passed tipsy about a half hour ago, so, yeah.
I love it. So, yeah, guys, thank you for listening. If you're enjoying the content that we bring to you, please go on to iTunes and leave us a review with words so that way we can continue to take over the world slowly and surely.
Emphasis on with words.
With words. Like, literally, like, write a sonnet.
Yes, we've been... Oh my god, yes. Write us a dirty limerick and put it in the review.
Please.
Yes. Oh my god, I love it. And Casey might send you a butt picture.
I will send you, listen, you send me a screenshot of the review that you write for my podcast, I will send you a butt picture.
Whether it is her butt or somebody else's butt has to be determined.
Butt picture roulette is what I like to call it.
Yes. I can say Casey has a glorious butt.
It is.
You'd be very lucky to receive a picture of that butt.
So, listen. Reviews for Butt Picture Roulette.
Mm-hmm.
It is on. Send us the screenshots.
Any of our other, podcasts, if you guys want to trade reviews, let us know.
We are here for that.
Always. Because damn it, we have nothing but time at the moment.
Seriously. So with all that time that you have right now, you should go on to Facebook and find us, Sinister, Strange, and Suspicious Podcast, or on Insta, SSS Podcast 13,
or also Twitter, same handle,
the SSS Twitter. Podcast
13.
You can tweet us there. I'm on there too, but I don't know what I'm doing, so. You know, whatever.
But we do, but she can see literally everything. So if you have something to say to Casey, I have no problem sending it to her.
Yeah.
And being the middleman.
Yeah.
You can also reach us via email at sssspodcast13@gmail.com. And you can reach our website at sssspodcast.net.
And we really hope to hear from you guys soon because we are fucking bored.
We are missing human interaction. We've been locked in our houses with our small children. Yeah. Help us.
You want to Zoom with us? We will Zoom.
Oh, fuck yes. What we need to do is to do a, what's the app with the, not House Party, but the other one where you can watch a Netflix movie together.
Oh, like the Netflix Party?
Yes, that. We need to do that with various fans because that would be a fucking blast.
We should set up an event for like a Friday night and just be like, we're going to do it. Oh, we should do a poll.
Yep.
Yeah, let's make that happen for this Friday.
Yeah, so we'll ask them for, I'm going to make a post. You guys give us your choices for what movie you want to watch.
Oh, no, let's not be that nice. Let's just give them, like,
no.
Let's just give them our top three picks or whatever, and then they can pick from that. Because, you know,
like,
then
our top three picks, and then the one with the most likes is the one that we do.
Yep.
Sounds good to me.
I think that's how we should do it, because I'm a bossy bitch. All right, guys, let us know what you want to watch, and we will hang out with you Friday. Thanks for listening.
What do you guys should also do on a Friday?
Bye.
Let's do it.